It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, my wife, the producer, has turned our shower into a fancy spa.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, we have a shower. Like many people do. Mm-hmm. It's a tub shower. So, it's like a combo bath shower thing. And traditionally, it had a plastic shower curtain.
Okay.
And over time, it would get gross and we'd clean it and stuff like that. That's what, especially the plastic ones, like they can grow stuff on them and it's weird. And it's not really launderable.
Okay.
So we try and keep up with it, eventually get bad enough, we just buy a new one, whatever. And it's a whole, the inside of it is a plastic inset to look like tiles, but it's not.
Okay.
Like it's fake tiles. And for the longest time, to have our shower accoutrement, we had a tension pole.
Sure.
Stuck in the corner, and it has little shelves on it and all that stuff.
Yep.
One day, the tension in the tension pole stopped.
Oh, and it all fell down.
Yes. So, what we did temporarily, and temporarily turned out to be for several years, was lean it against the wall just outside the tub.
Mm-hmm.
This created a lot of issues. One of which being that to reach stuff, we'd have to reach outside the shower, so we would frequently pour water on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but it would happen, you know, every day.
Yep.
It was on an angle. So, like, the soap would frequently slip out of the soap thing and fall on the floor behind the toilet, because that's where the toilet is right there. So, it's been terrible. So, my wife finally created the solution.
Okay.
She used those... She has new fixtures in the shower using command adhesive or knockoff command adhesive. So, now we've got two little bottles of her shampoo and my shampoo that you squeeze the bottom and it pops out kind of thing.
Okay.
We've got a soap dish, but it's just bars, so it's not, so it drains.
Mm.
For my soap, and actually I have a bulb syringe, I also stick there. And two hooks, one of which holds her scrubby thing, and the other, which holds a new fancy waterproof Bluetooth speaker.
Wow.
Yes. And the whole experience is pretty awesome, I gotta say. What are you looking at?
Do I hear people outside your door?
You do. I wonder who those people are. We didn't order no food. If you don't recognize them, punch them. He doesn't live here. He can't answer nothing, and we're podcasting, so you're out of luck. I'm terribly sorry. Ooh. Oh, he's such a sucker. He's giving money to random people to show up at the door. Oh, he's a monster. They're just going to use it on drugs.
Shut up.
Ugh. This wino has come to the door, and you're like, take my money.
No, they're kids. They're trying to raise money for something, you know.
The kids who wave from the children's hospital at Kinnick. No, it's not Kinnick. Yeah, it is Kinnick. Carver is the other one. Kinnick's the outdoor one.
I don't know.
Huh. But you're wearing a hat with the singular
Kinnick
state of being verb on it.
Kinnick Stadium is where the kids in the hospital can see the stadium.
Yes. There. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. It's outside. Yeah, that's how they can see it.
The hospital is Carver. Oh, you were thinking Carver Hawkeye Arena.
Yeah, there's
the
two
basketball.
There's two
oh.
places where sports ball happens.
Right.
One is inside and one is outside, and I mix them up because one is named after a famous sports baller and one is named after a famous sports baller.
But
and neither of them are the famous sports baller who has the street named after
but
him.
But Carver is also a name of part of the hospital.
Oh, is it really?
Yes. So I thought you were talking about
the hospital. Because he was a famous sports baller doctor.
He's donated a lot of money
oh.
to all of this.
They've also
stuff.
Got a Papa John pavilion, which I find weird. Except yeah. that has nothing to do with the pizza people, does it?
No.
That's good. That pizza's pretty terrible. Also, the dude said the N-word and stuff.
I think they have a wing of the hospital that's Carver or something or other.
All right.
Pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong.
I know they got
that.
Pomerantz and they got Papa John.
There's just lots of donors, yes.
I'll start with P.
I thought Carver was one of
Prickly
them.
Prickly Pear. Perfidious Pavilion. Anyway.
I might be mixed up.
Fancy that. Spa. Bathroom. It's pretty cool. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world to feature live, unrehearsed, on-air confidence grifting.
No, they were the
they
real
are
deal.
Totally going to spend it on
no,
hookers and blow and
no,
I don't know. Four Locos. What are the kids into these days? They're going to spend it on DMT. Wait. That's it. They're going to spend it on DMT.
You're asking me.
That is true. That
what
is
the
true.
Kids are into these days? I didn't know what the kids
DMT.
Were into when I was a kid.
He has trouble identifying kids. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 400.
Oh, come on.
63?
I'll tell you what. Give me $20 and I'll forget it all about it. And I'll give it to cancer children.
463.
463. I think you are correct. Because it was 462, and then it was 462.
Again.
So
yes.
Now it's 463.
That's right.
Let me explain how this works, because this is a two-parter. Because somebody... What are you going to see? I forget. You're going to see something, right?
Birds of Prey.
Yeah, you're going to see Birds of Prey next Thursday. So we're doing two-parter tonight, which means I'm only going to explain this once, people. So pay attention. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people who may feel like they recently submitted a lot to this, but may feel compelled to do so again because we might be getting low again.
Mm.
Write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's incredibly naive, servants, draw note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. So, I keep forgetting that we actually recorded last week. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
I keep thinking that we had to do a mystery episode, but we didn't.
We did not.
A mystery episode that may have a lot of questions in it, which may be related to why we're low on questions again, but I don't know about that.
I don't know.
Business.
Nope.
Those other dimensions and magic and shit. I don't know nothing about that. All right, so it's only been a single week, so how has your single week been?
Well, you know, Sabrina's back, and we haven't watched it.
We haven't yet either.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's going to be as crazy as it was before.
And the reason we haven't watched it is because we
because
bought...
there's so much more Oak Island left.
No, we did watch Oak Island yesterday, but we bought, some time ago, we bought a Blu-ray set of the complete series of Black Sails, and we're watching that.
Oh.
Again. And it's really, I mean, it's even better than I remember. It's just good.
I should put that on my, I have a list of things that I want to watch without Trish. Her list of things she wants to watch includes the ones that we want to watch together. She has a with Tony that she sticks on it. But I have a list of stuff that I'm watching that she's not interested in. And I should put that on there. I keep forgetting about that one.
Well, I've completely given up on being able to guess if you're going to like a show or not.
That seems wise.
I mean, because all of these shows have things in them that bother me.
Yeah.
And some of them I know would bother you, but I don't know if they'd bother you enough or if they'd bother you in the right in the way that would make you not like it or whatever.
I have a funny story related to that, but I'm saving it for when I talk about something else later.
So yeah, we've been watching it. It's really now. I recently read a book about the history of piracy at the time that the show takes place.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about it at length in an episode that doesn't exist.
And yes, I did. And so I'm sort of fresh in my mind all the things they do historically that are wrong, which bothered me the first time too. But now I'm.
But now you know even more of them.
Yes, but I'm kind of looking at it more like a. This takes place. I'm thinking of it more like it takes place in an alternate reality where people like Captain Flint and whatever exist. Because when you think about it, if you take the actual historical events, but then you add Captain Flint, especially if you make Captain Flint a character like he is in this, mm-hmm. He's a really influential character. Well, then everything's going to change, right? He's going to do some things that. Actual historical people did that now they can't do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So when I look at it like that, like this is an alternate history where Captain Flint and Long John Silver actually exist, then it's actually a little bit cool. But I still wish they'd stuck a little more to history. It doesn't make any sense.
There's an old Cracked After Hours that's about the Terminator. And the theory is essentially that all non-Terminator Arnold Schwarzenegger movies are simulations that the Terminator is going through. But the lead up to it, Mike brings this idea, and the lead up to it, he's talking about, and they're like, yeah, that's why they're like complaining about weird things in Schwarzenegger movies. And finally he says, guys, relax. They're all fake. And Daniel in particular, like, sits upright, angrily takes his glasses off, puts them back on. He's like, is that your argument today? Movies are fake? So when you said an alternate reality, I'm like, yeah, a TV show.
Yes, well.
Don't worry, it's all fake.
But it's just so good. The acting's good. The writing's good. It's just a really impressive show.
And only four seasons. That seems digestible.
Well, and it works, you know.
Yeah.
There are a few things in it that don't seem to jibe with the book. So it's like you pick up the book and read it right afterwards. It's like, oh, they didn't do this and they didn't do that. And some of the things were kind of iconic from the book, so you wonder why they didn't do those things.
The things that will, the catch-all for, will it like actively repel me as a show? Two basic things.
Okay.
And it's not even now 100%, but these are pretty sure. Is there sexual assault, and if so, to what ascent degree?
Right.
Depending on if it's harassment is one thing, but like outright sexual assault, unless it's some old timey movie that no one can act well, and so it's like that's a problem. And is there no way to empathize with any? But like, do these all just seem like a bunch of terrible people doing terrible things that I don't care if they live or die? And that one's the tricky one, because everyone's actually not all that. It is not unheard of for me to still like a show when that's true. But there's a lot of shows that I hate specifically because of that.
So which thing applies to Supernatural that made you just give up on it?
Supernatural did not actively repel me.
It just
Supernatural just got fucking. I was like, I've got 15 more seasons of this shit.
Well, yeah, we didn't even watch that much of it. We just watched.
Yeah,
the first.
No, I just it got tiring.
Yeah, I get that.
Really, fairly early.
I get that.
Yeah, no, that didn't repel me. I was just like, I'm not feeling it. And I mean, there are. Orphan Black was a trickier one, and Orphan Black I didn't stop watching. I just took a break and never went back. But Orphan Black just was so. Grimdark. It was just so depressing that eventually I was just like, I just feel sad and like energy has been taken from me when I watch. They're good episodes, but I just feel exhausted from watching it, and I feel like I'm getting nothing back. So again, but then like, the one that really spooked you was Bates Motel, and that one was, and I knew about the rape scene up front. There's a lot of other sexual assault issues later on.
Yeah.
That got in the way. I eventually read up on it, and I think if I could have sort of pushed through, I might have gotten into it, but I didn't want to, and I'm glad I didn't. I don't think like that's a good attitude to have of like just hold your breath for these that really creep you the fuck out.
Yeah,
and then
you're not wrong.
Yeah. But that's the usual category.
Yeah.
But that's just if I'm gonna be repelled. I could still be like, I don't like it, which is fine too.
So well, the craft of it is just so good, you know.
From what I've heard, I'm gonna like it. And I put it on the list because it's a thing on there.
But yeah, so we're enjoying that.
Still playing Skyrim. I see that a lot.
Yeah. Still playing Skyrim. Now, there actually sometime this year, in the not too distant future, I think I talked about the werewolf, the white wolf.
Yeah.
Game that they say they're going to release. But did I mention that there is a Skull and Bones pirate simulation game that they're going to be out this year?
No.
I think we might get that.
There have been a few pirate simulation games.
Yeah, this one.
Sid Meier's Pirates is a classic one. Yeah. And there's.
I don't know.
Sea of Thieves right now is very big.
Yeah, but I don't think any of them are on the PS4 console. I think they're all.
I don't know about
PC.
Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is an MMO, so that has its own problems.
But
Sid Meier's Pirates is just really old now, so I don't know where it is.
Everything we've seen of, like, the, you know, the demos and trailers of the Skull and Bones, I think it's called Skull and Bones, looks really good. And
you sure it's not just about a elite secret club
at Harvard?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
It looks pretty cool. And you can customize your character and everything, so that sounds fun. So I think I don't know what this pirate thing is. Mostly it's Oak Island, I think. Just the whole idea of thinking that maybe some of the archaeology is related to in any way to piracy, and it's like, well, what was going on back then, and who were the players, and the more you learn about it, though, the less likely that seems like. I mean, pirates were up there and everything, but
that was your theory. You came up with that idea.
No, well, I'm not the only one. I mean, some people thought that Captain Kidd buried treasure up there, even though that didn't seem likely. What's happening is as they're doing the archaeology and they're like testing some of the wood, like carbon dating, and also, what do they call it? When they can look at the rings and not just tell how old the piece of wood is, but like comparing it to other wood in the area, they can tell what year this ring formed. Mm. Well, anyway, you by that you can tell when something was actually cut down. So, you know, they're dating some of this stuff to very specific dates, to like 1769 or whatever, but that's a weird date because, I mean, I won't get into it, but it would be hard for someone to have built those structures then without anybody noticing, and yet nobody mentioned them. Mm. And it's too late for someone like William Kidd. It's too late for the Golden Age of pirates. So then it wasn't that there weren't pirates at this time, but there weren't like really well-known ones, so we don't really know where they were or what they were doing. So it feels like we're not going to get answers on it, and that's too bad because I'm fascinated by it.
It was all done by a lesser-known pirate, Dwayne the Oaf.
Do you have any interest in pirates at all? Just as a topic?
I have interest in it. I have narrative and cosmetic interest in pirates.
Oh, okay.
I don't particularly have interest in... I have interest in pirates as a fantasy setting.
Well,
I don't have interest in the history of pirates particularly.
My current interest in the so-called Golden Age is I'm fascinated with how it starts less with pirates and more with privateers, and also how the theatricality is such a big aspect of it. Like there were so many pirates who were successful because they just put on a show to convince people that they would do terrible things, and because they did that, they never actually had to do very many terrible things, or if any terrible things. So that's interesting to me, I guess, from an anthropological perspective. And some of their political views are interesting, obviously. But whatever. So how was your week?
I mean, not good. I was very sick for most of it.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I got a bad stomach bug.
Oh no.
Out of the blue, Monday morning. Like, I was great Sunday night.
Huh.
And in fact, I went. We had dinner with the neighbors, and we were doing taco potatoes. And I went to Carlos O'Kelly's and got some of the chili con queso because it's really good to put on the potatoes. And I saw somebody I go to the gym with at Carlos, and I was like, I'll be there tomorrow. I'll see you. And then I woke up in the morning. Thought I was gonna manage to not actually throw up, but totally felt like I was gonna throw up. And then so I'm staying home and I'm working from home Monday and Tuesday, and then Tuesday afternoon I'm starting to feel better. I'm like, I think I'm gonna go back tomorrow, which is good because I'm getting sick of the house. And Wednesday morning, my symptoms evolved. That's all I feel like is appropriate to say. Things changed. Like when you get a head cold and it becomes a chest cold. It was like that, but my stomach and So, well, but even then I didn't feel too bad at that point. But at that point I was like, I feel like there's still a good chance I could still be infectious.
Oh, sure.
So I decided to stay home. But then I was like going crazy. And I told her, I was like, I don't care if bits are falling off on me. I'm coming to work tomorrow. And I went to work today and I went to the gym today. I was very happy about that.
So was it the flu or did you just...
I don't know. I didn't ever have a fever.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know for sure, but I feel like probably not. I don't know. It was very intense, but comparatively very quick. It really only took me out for 3 days. And
it wasn't something you ate, though, because everybody else...
No, but that was my first thinking. Is that something there? But yeah, nobody else I know has done them. I don't know.
That's too bad.
I get sick a lot in January. It's very... but
I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am feeling much better. But so yeah, I hadn't been doing a lot there. I've just been sort of laying around at home, play a lot more Divinity Original Sin. It's getting pretty good now. I'm getting kind of into it. I understand how it works. And, so that's been fun. I am one episode away from the end of Elementary.
Oh.
And that last episode is going to be very busy. We had like two different major cliffhangers on the second to last episode, and then the description for the last episode includes a whole new thing from like several seasons back. I'm like, wow, it's still only a 45 minute episode. You're going to have a lot to fit in that one series.
This
finale
is the end
episode.
Of the,
just the end of the whole show.
Wow.
They kind of did a thing at the end of season 6 that could have been a decent series finale, but then they got it renewed for one more, but they said it was one of those. They said, this is going to be the last one. So, we watched the entire first season of Fleabag.
Oh, well, how'd you like that?
That's a very interesting question.
We started to watch it, and we weren't crazy about it, and then we never got back to it.
I am unsurprised. Yeah. I liked it. I think Trish liked it. I, in general, would recommend it. I feel like I might specifically not recommend it to you and your wife.
I mean, it wasn't bad, but it just wasn't, I don't think it was made for me.
Well, and after the first episode, Trisha very much did not like it.
Oh.
And then the second one, she's like, I like it a little better. By the third one, she kind of liked it. It very much needs its full arc.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it makes, things make so much sense by the end. Like, you get a real feel for the characters and things like that. It's only 6 episodes. I was surprised they're only half hour long. I hadn't known that. It's only 6 episodes in the first season. It is a tricky one to go into, and people have said this. The main character, and to a degree, most of the characters, are really reprehensible. They're really not good people, and that is tricky. But it is very clever. It's fairly earnest. For you, my big concern for you is that you will not relate to a single person in the show, or like understand their motivations or their actions at all. And without any sort of connection like that, it's just going to seem like a bunch of random terrible things happening.
That's kind of what it was like, but it's also, there are other shows like this. I don't find just hearing people's horrible inner dialogue entertaining. I mean, I know,
and that's what it is. She absolutely fourth wall breaks constantly.
Yeah.
That's her shtick.
Well, it kind of like, Veep is kind of like that.
Is it?
Veep is just constant people insulting one another and saying things that they probably don't, you know, nobody would really say, but they might think. And, you know, we watched a lot of it, but it's like, I'm just not entertained by that. See, like, sometimes roasts don't entertain me because it's just mean.
I have issues. Like, I have issues. I used to love roasts, and I can't watch most of them. To be fair, most of them are really stupid.
I mean, people, that's fine. I mean, I understand why other people think it's funny. It just doesn't do it for me.
In a lot of ways, and that's the thing, I am not the demographic for this in a lot of ways, but I related very strongly in a lot of situations to the main character in ways I very much did not like.
Oh.
And some of it was aspects, most of it, I would say, is aspects of my past. Hmm. I was much more like her when I was younger, and I relate to some of that. And some of it doesn't really come up until later in the thing, where you get more into her backstory and get more into what she's feeling. And she comes to some realizations and things like that. And there's a pretty strong arc between her and her sister. That's a big thing throughout the thing. It's a hell of a cast. Brett Gelman's in there. Olivia Colman is in there. I'm very fascinated that very few people get names, including her. We don't ever know her name.
Oh.
We don't ever know her dad's name. We know her sister's name, and we know her sister's husband's name. But, like, there's various guys that she, like, dates or sleeps with throughout the show, and none of them get names. Well, except one guy. There's one guy that's her ex, and he gets a name. But, like, so many characters don't. And even in the credits, they're, like, Rodent Man or Asshole Man or things like that. Like, they're not. Hugh Dennis is in this, which isn't going to mean anything to anybody, but Hugh Dennis is a comedian that I know because he's the one on Mock the Week. He's the one panelist that's there all the time. He's been on every episode. But in this, he plays a very serious role. I mean, it's a comedy, but it's definitely a dramatic comedy. And he has some serious acting in this. It's very impressive to me. It is a lot about sex, but not gratuitously at all. Like, sex is very important to her, and sex is a large part of her self-identity, and that gets explored. And, like, the shortcomings of that get explored. Like,
yeah, it's
addressed.
My observation was it's a coping mechanism, largely, it seemed like.
I'd say that's a little bit glib, but having hardly seen that much of it, that doesn't surprise me. That's one of those things that I tie in. My identity used to be very tied up in who I was having sex with and who wanted to have sex with me and things like that. So I relate in a very bad way to that. It's very interesting. I totally want to watch the second season. And it's short, so I would recommend it to most people, but if you're going to do it, do the whole thing. And I don't mean necessarily binge it in a day. I think we watched it in two sittings. We watched three episodes in three episodes. Mm. But, like, kind of say, okay, if we're going to start this, unless it immediately repulses us, we're going to try and watch it all the way through. Because it has an arc and stuff that stuff doesn't necessarily work if you don't watch it all.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll work for you or not.
I don't think we found it repulsive. In particular, I thought the writing was very sharp and the acting was very good. It just, you know, something, you know, not everything is made for me.
No, absolutely.
And this didn't seem like one of those things that was made for me.
She wrote it too. She wrote the whole thing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's based off of one-woman show that she did. I think it is somewhat autobiographical.
Oh, okay.
And she's also the woman who created Killing Eve.
Which I haven't seen.
So she's an absolute fucking phenom right now.
Did she not? Didn't she voice the droid in Solo?
Yes. I recently found that out.
Yeah.
Yes. She's fucking everywhere right now. She was also in that sketch I showed you with the news crew, with the SNL sketch where the news team was, the criminals were black versus white or whatever. That was when she was hosting SNL and she was in that sketch. No, she's amazing. And in fact, I want to watch it again because I watched it before we watched this show. But Donald Glover, she was being given some award at the BAFTAs, and he gave a speech about it, And it's hilarious because he talks about like when he met her and all this, and then he went home and watched her show, and he's like, and I was livid. He's like, I can't. I'm not a white British lady. You know, I'm American. I'm a black man, and I don't love anal sex. And then there was a laugh, and there's a pause, and he goes, anymore. And he's like, but I still felt like I should have been making this show. Because it's brilliant. Like, whether you enjoy it or not, it's really well crafted.
Yeah, I've got to give it that.
And original.
For sure. I've got to give it. Original, too. Yeah, yes, yeah. You're right about that.
And I'm excited for second season, too. But we'll see. So that was fun. We watched a movie last night that was interesting. Been meaning to watch it for a while. Trish did not particularly like it. She has said this.
Okay.
I particularly did, and I'm not sure why. And it's not a bad movie. It's a well-made film, well-acted, well-produced. But again, sort of a story about bad people doing bad things, so not necessarily so fun. It's called Can You Ever Forgive Me? And it came out a year or two ago. I've been wanting to see it for a long time. It is Melissa McCarthy in a dramatic role.
Oh, I think I've seen
a brilliant dramatic role. Like, people were kind of annoyed she got Oscar snubbed for it.
Oh, okay.
And Richard E. Grant, who is an actor most of you will recognize by face and voice, who generally plays the bad guy in everything. Like, I think he's been a couple different Doctor Who villains. Like, he's always the bad guy. Playing a footloose, fancy-free, early 90s gay drifter, basically, who's hilarious. It's such a great role to see him in. It's kind of like when I watched Jean-Luc Picard play the interior designer in the movie Jeffrey with the chorus boy boyfriend. Anyway, and it's based on a true story. Or, to be more accurate, it is based on a book that is about a true story.
Okay.
And is the story of author whose name is Lee Israel, who is who Melissa McCarthy plays in this.
Okay.
Who, due to various circumstances, ended up becoming a remarkably good forger of famous of letters and notes of famous literary people throughout history. And it kind of spun into this whole thing because she couldn't get published herself at the time. And so she had been published a little bit and even had a bestseller a long time ago, but she was having trouble. And so she sort of stumbled upon this thing and it became a whole thing and she got arrested and all sorts of things because forgery is not only illegal, it's a federal crime, which I find fascinating. I want to know like what counts as forgery because there's got to be some stuff that I can fake that nobody will give a shit about. And yeah, it gets weird. But
even if you didn't tell people it was fake?
Well, it's the thing. Is it if I'm taking money for it? Is it if it's not obvious? Like, I'm fascinated by the details of it. And Trish actually looked it up, and technically she didn't get arrested for forgery. She got arrested for related things. And it's kind of like when you can't get the mob boss on murdering all the people, so you get him for tax evasion or whatever.
Okay.
But
it's fraud if you say something is something that it's not, and you get people to pay big money for something.
That's true. Real. But not all fraud is federal crime, is it?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's the thing. This is federal. I think all forgery is considered federal crime.
I think
crime.
You're right about that. You're right. So how does that work?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to look at the movie.
Right,
does not.
It
get
is
into
distinct
it.
From fraud,
yeah.
It seems. Huh.
But I think.
Well, did she have to have. Copy,
I don't,
like
I don't,
a signature or something?
I mean, that came up, but she's not a nice person.
Okay.
and that's part of the point of the film.
Yeah.
And her friend is not a nice person. And, I mean, things don't... It's definitely a dramatic comedy or comedic drama. I don't know. And so that's kind of weird. And it's not a real satisfying... Because it's based on real life, and the ending's not super satisfying. It may be a character thing. The characters were just really fascinating. It's also, the movie is very clearly a love letter to New York through the soundtrack and the way it's shot. Like, it's very obsessed with how cool New York is, especially in the early 90s, which is when it takes place.
It's fun to watch McCarthy work, though. She's very good.
And dramatic. Like, this is a serious role, and I've never seen it. And it's worth seeing for that.
I'm not surprised at all.
And again, if you know Richard E. Grant at all, it's such fun to see him. And he choose the scenery in just a brilliant way. And there's touchings on that, too. I mean, he's a very active and indiscriminate gay party boy who lived through the 80s. So, spoiler alert, there may be some medical issues that come up at certain points and things like that. And it's New York in that time period, so it's very much like just a fact of life then. And yeah, I found it fascinating. And it's not happy or anything. It's not a great story, but it's just some amazing people and some amazing performances by these people. So I would recommend it. I mean, go in with all knowing all of that, but I was pretty into it. I feel like there should be some other stuff in there. I don't really remember what it was. I guess that's probably it. Yeah, probably. Okay.
Should I draw something out of the hat then?
Yeah, go ahead and do that. What do you... You just run across the room so that then you can be really slow. So there is not anything there. If you start trying to bury non-existent... I'm going to be mad. I sent him to... He went to the vet today. I'll send him back. He's fucking around.
Coffee wants to know. What is the most beautiful view you've ever seen?
I was awake during my colonoscopy. And... Sorry. I thought that was hilarious. Come on. Come on.
Nice try, though. Good effort. Boy, I don't know.
I've got an answer, like, holstered ready for this, just in life. But I don't know if it's accurate anymore. I just have, like, you know how people say, what's your favorite movie? And you have one ready.
Yeah.
And, like, years later, you're like, maybe it's not my favorite movie. Like, that's the thing. I've had one for a long time on this. Part of it is at the time, this was the late 90s, and I was still very much a religious person at that point.
Yeah.
I was at the height of my neo-paganism. And so it wasn't just a gorgeous view. The whole experience was very transformative to me and like was like an eye-opening, life-changing thing, but it was an amazing view. And it almost feels cliched because, of course, obviously, it's not quite... standing at the top of Mount Everest, but it's close. I was in England, living there that semester, and we went to the Lake District, and we hiked up on top of one of the, I don't know, they might call them mountains, hills, and it was basically, you could look out over all of the Lake District, and it was a gorgeous day, and it was one of the most spectacular things I'd ever seen in my life, and it was so... green. And that's coming from here, which is, you know, Iowa taught me about green, but this was just absolutely perfect green. It was gorgeous. Ladies and gentlemen, wait, it's been a long time. And then gives up.
Well,
when are you struggling to come up with the best one, or are you just struggling to come up with a good view to talk about? Are you blind? Is this how we find out you're blind? Have you never seen a view?
When I... to me, a good way to answer this question is if I'm trying to remember something that... something visually that I want... to be nostalgic about or have good feelings about, that is nature. Okay. I'm not just going to be thinking about having a conversation with my mom or something like that, but I'm out in nature and I'm remembering this like, oh, that was a great experience. if that's how I'm answering the question, everything that comes to mind are things I experienced when I was young. Like, you know, sometimes we'd sleep outside and the moon wouldn't be out, but you could see the Milky Way because it was dark. You know, I didn't live in town, so we didn't have light pollution blocking all the stars. So you could see all the stars while you were lying there. Now, this is something I could see whenever I wanted when I was growing up, but it was always very profound to me. And it's one of the most important experiences I can remember having as a kid, just being able to do that. But there were lots of other things, like when the full moon would come up, you know, the part of Iowa that I grew up in is not flat, but our farm was flat enough that when the moon came up, it was huge. Yeah. This huge, beautiful orange moon. I got to see that all the time, but it was very important and moving to me. And in the fall, when the leaves would change. Now, I've been to the mountains, and I've been to the ocean, and I've been overseas. I've been to Moscow. I've been a lot of places, and I've seen a lot of things that I think are very amazing. And if someone says, tell me all the amazing things you've seen, I might name some of those things. But none of those things are things I think about when I'm in a place where I just want to think about something beautiful and breathtaking. Whenever I'm in that mood, I think of things that are back home. And a few things are even around here, because this is a beautiful spot. And up in north eastern Iowa, where the glaciers didn't flatten everything, you know, it's very hilly and there's a lot of bluffs. Some of those views are beautiful. And I think about those things sometimes. So it just seems like that's a boring answer to say the most beautiful things that I've seen that I think about when I want to think of a beautiful scene. It's things that are back on the farm there where I grew up, or other places in Iowa where I've been.
I'm wondering who you think the hypothetical audience here is, where you describe something you saw at the farm and they're like, that's boring. And then the other time you're like, oh no, I saw the Grand Canyon. And they're like, ooh.
Well, but yours is interesting. You're somewhere else. It's a spiritual experience, I guess. I mean, mine kind of were too, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's cheating, but my what makes this interesting is largely how you describe it. And to a certain degree, I think it's more interesting if it's not intuitive, which some of yours aren't. Well, some of yours are.
Here, another thing I like to think about is there's a prairie restoration place here in Iowa. And to me, going there and, you know, there's a walking trail and you can sort of sit on a bench and being able to look out at the prairie with all of its thousands of little types of plants and little tiny flowers and all of the great things about it. And it's making this fantastic noise and you can watch the wind travel across the hills and waves. It's better than the ocean to me. I mean, the ocean, I like the ocean. It was inspiring, but I could sit there forever and the emotions are so strong. And sometimes it makes me, you know, laugh. And sometimes it makes me choke up a little bit. It's just so beautiful. And it also makes me kind of,
sometimes it makes him kill.
Sometimes it makes me sad because this is what almost all of Iowa used to look like,
yeah,
and used to be. And it's so gorgeous and it's so moving. But, yes, it's all Iowa. Really.
I'm always amused when people talk about the ocean as a thing they've seen, because I'm like, that's not a thing. Off the top of my head, I can think of five drastically different views and environments that are all the ocean.
Yeah, there's
different ones.
That's right.
And they don't remotely look the same.
I know, but
there's a lot of water.
You grew up near the ocean, though.
And that's one of them, yeah.
So.
And I grew up spending summers in Hawaii and stuff like that. And now only in my adulthood did I ever see the Atlantic Ocean and then over in Europe. Because now I think another one of my favorite views is the Pembrokeshire coast in Wales. That,
sure,
was some amazing,
right, but
rock fronts there.
When you grow up in Iowa and you don't see the ocean until you're an adult, you can't appreciate, I mean,
I guess there is something to do.
Whatever version of the ocean it is, you just can't appreciate it till you see it. I mean, you see it on TV and you hear people talk about it. And sometimes you think, oh, it can't be that great. But no, it's pretty great. I mean, granted, my first experience with the ocean, see, it's weird because my actual first experience with the ocean was when I was 10 and we went to New York, but it didn't seem, I mean, I was seeing.
North Atlantic is not impressive particularly, well,
and
I don't think.
It didn't seem that much different than seeing, say, the Great Lakes or something, because you're seeing a harbor or whatever. The first time I saw the ocean and it felt like I was seeing the ocean, right, was in the Gulf. We were in Florida for the first time and went.
And you were like, that is a lot of oil.
To the Gulf side. And it was like, oh, this is what they're talking about, you know. And the mountains were the same. When I first drove out to Colorado, and especially when you drive out there from Iowa, because you first go across Nebraska, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's arid and there are tumbleweeds and it's flat. And mm-hmm. it's like, there's never going to be mountains because I can see 100 miles and there's nothing there. And then you get to the foothills and you see the mountains in the distance. And then you think, oh, that's what people are talking about when they're so excited about the mountains. And it was cool. But I don't think it did for me what it does for most people. I think I'm a big sky person, really, and so that's what moves me.
See, and to me, this is very interesting because I got none of that, because I was seeing the ocean and the mountains
your whole life
when I was so young that I don't remember seeing
them. It's like part of who you are.
Meanwhile, cornfields, most boring motherfucking thing in the world, and to come here. And because another one of the great views I had, and I've talked about this before, I think, in 2000, 2001, somewhere around there, we had the brightest full moon we'd had since the 19th century or something.
Yeah.
And so I was still living in Grinnell, but not at school anymore. And I had a friend who was also doing that, and we both were realizing what a terrible mistake that was. But so he and I drove out in the middle of the night, like, took the highway to a county road, to a gravel road, to a dirt road.
Sure.
Out in the middle of nowhere. It is winter.
Oh.
There is a lot of snow.
Yeah.
It is unfathomably cold to us. It's definitely, at best, it might have been in the low teens. I don't even know. I feel like it was even colder than that. And we got out of the car, and we sat there, and we looked, and that moonlight on, because there's still the stalks. There's still the broken stalks out there.
Yeah.
That was the first time I was like, oh.
Yeah.
and I've talked about it since then. I was like, this is how I know I became a full Midwesterner, because I'll tell people various things about it, and they're like, yeah, that doesn't get. And I was like, and I can appreciate the beauty of a cornfield in all four seasons. And that usually gives them pause. They're like, okay, that's a thing.
Well, there. one of my favorite lines from the Night Before Christmas poem is the moon on the breast on the crest or breast. They sometimes it's different. The moon on the breast of the new fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. I love that line because I've seen that so many times in my life, and it's like, oh, that's perfect. And especially in wintertime, when a lot of times when I was young, seemed to happen a lot. It doesn't happen as much anymore. But there'd be a nice layer of ice on top of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just, it's indescribable. I mean, you know, people probably know what it's like when the moon is on the water or a lake or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it's on snow, it's just like magic. Now, see, that's another thing I remember. I remember snow when I was a kid, and just miles and miles of snow with a little crust of ice on top that would support you. You could walk on top of it. And it was just beautiful. And icicles and all of the trees had ice all over. No, it's just some of those times when I was out in at wintertime, it was just so gorgeous and so beautiful and so quiet.
I do love that.
Peaceful. And then
the silence that comes with snow.
And then you'd take your sled and you'd sled on the big hills. It was just fantastic.
On Riverside near Burlington, just past it if you're coming from Coralville. They have that little retaining wall along there, and there's like a tiny trickle of waterfall through there. And when the winter temperatures hit just right, it creates sort of an ice sculpture in that. And because of the way they have it set up, it's fucking spotlit.
Oh, Oh, yeah.
Because they have those lights showing on the wall, and that can be amazing. Yeah. I'm always like, did some graduate student make that as their art project? I was like, no, that's just how it works.
Something else that's impossible to describe to people who've never seen it. Back in the day, when we got more snow, there'd be drifts in all the ditches. And what they looked like was, imagine like a wave, like in the surf. But then right before it breaks, you know how the surfs break?
Yeah, yeah.
Right before it breaks, you freeze that and you turn it into snow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's what the ditches would look like for miles and miles. And just this beautiful.
They look less like that if you drive into them going 55. I'm just saying.
Well, when I was a kid, one time we...
I had to learn how to drive over again because of those winters.
When it was Sunday morning and we were going to church and Dad actually ran the sound system and our church services were broadcast over the radio.
Mm.
So he kind of, quote unquote, had to be there. So we're in the car and we're coming up to these drifts that are over the road. And so he backs up and we're in this in a van. He backs up and he barrels through the snow drifts, probably six of them on the way to Knoxville. And we got to church and it was canceled.
Hey.
Then coming back, he actually got stuck. So all of us kids got out and we walked over the fields to get to our house. I'm not sure why we did that, but by the time we got there, he'd gotten unstuck and he was there before us.
Laughing.
I guess. But walking through the snow even was like so fun. I don't know. I had a great childhood in terms of getting outside and experiencing nature and the little brooks and streams on our... I mean, when I read Calvin and Hobbes and he's out in nature or he's in the snow or in the woods, that's totally what it was like for me growing up. And I know that sounds weird to some people maybe because... It's
no,
like,
I remember your phase when you peed on a lot of logos. So, I mean, this makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, and I just remember all of those things and no view I've ever seen any place else in the world or that other people might describe surpasses those images that are in my memory.
This is going to make this question weird because it's a question about views, about vistas, as it were.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to have a hard time separating your feelings about the surrounding experience of a vista. Because here's my question to you. How much does it matter to see something in person versus seeing an image of it, assuming it's a large enough and well done enough image? Because this is a question I've started asking myself, because there are certain things that I have seen, like I saw a movie that like showed this place and later I went to that place and I'm like, yeah, it's really cool. I'm not sure that it's doing more for me now than it did when I saw it in the movie or whatever.
Well, for me, it's always does more to see it. Always. Now, a lot more? Not necessarily. Like, a lot more enough to justify the expense of going there or whatever? Not always. But it always does more every single time.
And I feel like this is the reason that I feel like technology's done a lot of this. Because I feel like before, you didn't have the clarity. You didn't have the size. I mean, I'm already running into things where sometimes, you know how we always talk about some movies you want to see on the big screen?
Yeah.
I'm getting to movies where some movies I want to wait. I specifically want to wait and see them on my TV because my TV has a better picture.
Well, now when you see something in a movie, it's larger than life, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So then you go see it in person and it's a lot smaller than you expected to
be. And there's set dressing. And
but there's details, right? There's you're imagining what it was like. For example, if you go to the Field of Dreams here in Iowa,
mm-hmm.
where they shot that movie.
Which, to be fair, I don't think I have.
To me, it doesn't look as grand and as I don't know, magical, I guess, as it does on the movie
screen. Fewer ghosts.
Of course. But it's still so cool. There you are. There's the baseball field. I mean, it just looks like an ordinary baseball field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know it's not an ordinary baseball field. And then the house is up there. That you don't, I mean, it's someone's house, so you don't go up there and go into it. But you see it up there, and it, you know, it's kind of at a distance enough that it's still like, oh, there it is, you know. It's cool to see that. So, one of the things I'd like to do if I ever get to Europe is the in Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein goes to the University of Ingolstadt, which is not a thing anymore. But all of the buildings that used to belong to the university are still there, including the buildings that belonged to the sort of the medical college that he would have attended.
Yeah, I've heard it's a Starbucks now.
No, but it is cool looking. Like, I've seen pictures. I mean, she doesn't really describe it or anything, but she says he goes to Ingolstadt and it's in for medicine. So these are the buildings that perhaps she knew about and imagined, even though she never described them. I would love to go there and see it. I'm sure that if I do, it's not going to meet all my expectations, but I'll be like there where, you know, where she might have imagined, Mary Shelley might have imagined Victor was at.
And I get that. To me, that's not about the view. To me, that's a different thing of being at a place where history was made, or being at a place that has a connection to something.
I guess so.
And that, which I like too. But Ingolstadt, small sidestep here. So Trish is making dollhouses lately, you know, and dollhouses for, I think we talked about this. She's making miniature stuff.
Oh no,
that's her current kick. She's on. And so she's reading and looking at a lot of it, and she sees this one recently on a site. And it's in German, but, you know, the photos are still in English.
Okay.
As it were. And so she's looking at this, and it's really cute. And it's this little house, and there's a little dog out in front. And the German thing, it has a little caption in it, and it talks about Puppenhausen. And she's like, it's so cute. It's this puppy house that you ever say. And I was like, yeah. And then I ruined it for her because I'm like, it's probably the German word for dollhouse. It probably like puppet.
Oh, yeah. Or poppet. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, and so I ruined it for her because I'm like, yeah, sorry. I don't think the Germans have a specific word for puppy house. I mean, if a language would, it would be them.
Yeah.
But she still talks about me Puppenhausen. but I have to spoil everything. Okay, then a little bit sideways thing here. Oh, we don't have a lot of time, but I feel like this is just me, like, angrily reacting to the world. But I also have times where I'm looking at a really impressive vista, and I very purposely, rebelliously refuse to take a picture of it. Because I'm like, no. I am going to experience it now. I am not going to take a photo and then later try and recreate that or whatever. Because I'm obsessed with this idea that everybody's busy recording and taking pictures of things rather than experiencing the things. And so I have moments where I'm like, no, this is just special. And it's going to stick with me as well as I remember it. And eventually it's going to fade, and that's sad, but that's how things work.
Yeah, I never take pictures of these things. And I've had some people say, well, you know, if this was so exciting and moved you so much, why didn't you take a picture of it? And that's my answer, is that you're interrupting it.
Yeah.
What will help me remember this till the day I die is experiencing it right now. And if anything happens to me that makes me forget this, a picture's not going to help.
Yeah.
A picture's not going to help. If I can forget this experience, then seeing a picture that's a very poor representation for what I experienced, I'm just going to say, yeah, I think I recognize that, or that looks familiar. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
And
so I might as well just not even bother. I'll just experience it, and then that'll be fine.
The purpose is weird. And this has been getting me a lot with parents and their children's performances. And to a degree, I get it. And I get that you do some, but so many of them are so busy filming it. And I'm like, your cell phone video of your kid's concert, yeah, the great aunt who couldn't make it is going to be happy to see that. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying your kid's concert. You're not.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have to enjoy this, like, objectively worse representation of it later.
If you ever watch it again.
Because, yeah, and that's the thing, too. You show it around, like, two times, and then you never do it again. Mm. And that, too much with the photo things, often feel like that to me. It's like, you're taking a photo so that later you can show people where you were. And I'm like, I don't care about them seeing it. I'm seeing it. And don't get me wrong. It's when it's a big, meaningful thing. Like, there's plenty of times I'm like, oh, it's really cool here, and I'll take pictures because it's nice, but...
Now, my wife takes pictures when we go places, but she does so because there's a little bit, she's a little bit of a photographer. So
yeah, and I'm not opposed to photo albums and things like that.
Well, but she doesn't want to like necessarily just say preserve the moment. She wants to make a good photograph. She's not necessarily going to remember when and where and how it was taken. She just, oh, that's a good picture. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, so, and so that's fine. You know, we'll be walking on a trail or something, and she'll say, oh, this will make a good picture, and she'll take a picture of it. But it's not like a memento or something we would put in a photo album. In fact, what she used to do was she used to put them out on Zazzle and make postcards.
Oh, okay.
And she actually sold quite a few postcards because of her photographs. So she does that. But I mean, for the most part, I don't think either one of us really feel like we have to like preserve the moment. We want to live the moment. That's the thing we're going to remember.
And that's where it comes up. Stopping to take a picture would disrupt the experience.
Well, for me, it would. Sometimes
it would, and sometimes it wouldn't. I think that's one of my deciding factors of if I'm going to do it. Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm in this moment. Don't do it.
Yeah, that's my. I mean, I took a lot of pictures when I went to the Soviet Union because we were expected to bring pictures back to our benefactors.
Yeah, and you're recording history and stuff like that. And for a group trip, and you want to show people the trip, that's the thing. It, like I said, it's those moments where like something's really happening right now. I'm really having a moment. Yeah.
I would often forget to snap things because I was too busy. Yeah. That's right.
I wish I took more pictures in general. I forget to take pictures.
Yeah, I do too.
So I try and fit them in. And also my picture taking technique is, especially with cell phones now, is I hold up the cell phone and I hit the button like 12 times.
Yeah.
One of them's going to be good. And it works, but like it's a pain in the ass to go through later. We are out of time. So go and admire your own beautiful view on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. And put pictures there of beautiful vistas, and we'll tell you whether or not you should have actually gone there, I guess. I don't know. This is part one of two, so listen again next week for part two of two. Listen again next week anyway, but this time just be prepared that for us only very few minutes will have passed. So have a good week, people.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.